Welcome to the Mama Bear Dares podcast. I'm Leslie.
And I'm Tessie.
And we started this podcast because we believe that it isn't necessarily the rich, powerful, or well-known who are making the waves in the world. It's the moms. It's the women tending to their toddlers while launching international nonprofits or caring for babies and creating art. It's the women who believe in both their mother self and their other self, and who are nourishing both as those around them stand back in admiration for the way that they stride through life. We know this to be true. It's the hand that rocks the cradle that rules the world. Join the Mama Bear community where we support and encourage women doing big and bold things with their lives, in addition to being great moms, and dare you to harness the power of your Mama Bear to live a life of love and compassion.
Absolutely. So on today's episode, we're going to speak on current events. So much is happening out there, you guys. And guess what? This is our first podcast. This is the first time that Leslie and I have talked to each other in 3 weeks, basically. She just returned from her 3-week vacation, which involves some time in Nice. So we thought it was time to tackle the headlines yet again. We'll talk a bit about Leslie's vacation. We'll talk a bit about Nice, but the bulk of our conversation will be about how we engage our mama bear to fight for justice in the world, and also how we try to raise our kids to be compassionate and loving when it feels like the world is the opposite. So just a quick note to reassure our listeners, we are not interested in getting into politics right now. Of course, we have our own thoughts on politics, but this podcast is and should be a safe space for everyone. So today we're not talking about politics specifically, but in broader terms, how do we remain compassionate and non-judgmental during these times? You know, and how do we raise our kids to do the same, maybe even more importantly? So let's tackle these topics with open minds, because we really do believe we can learn a lot from one another when we stop shouting at each other. And if you disagree, tell us so in the comments from this episode on our social media. We love a healthy and respectful dialogue.
Tessie, I missed you.
I know. I missed you too. This is so exciting.
I know. We prepared a lot of podcasts before I left, and it was so much fun listening to them while I was away, listening to them with advertising that came in different languages. That was fun.
I can only imagine. That's so amazing. I hope that like the Burger King ads are more interesting in Spanish than in English.
Not really.
That's fair. That's fair. So Leslie, as we said in the intro, your family just got back from, we can call it the trip of a lifetime. Can we not?
It was pretty amazing. I don't know. I mean, we're adventurous souls, but I'm not sure we'll be planning a trip of that caliber and that required that much energy, at least for another couple of years.
That's right. So you spent time in Ethiopia and then flew in and out of Istanbul to Barcelona. Then you went to the coast of France and finished with the family visit just outside of Nice in the French Riviera. I mean, I'm not even sure you've had time to decompress, but maybe just tell us a few of the highlights.
I've had a little time to decompress. We've unpacked and done some laundry, but I think in the past episode, you know that I'm not like super picky about my laundry. Like, it's not like we wash our sheets or things like that.
Wash your sheets. Oh, it's back.
I've been wanting to bring that back for a while. But no, it was an incredible trip. It was so good for our family. We spent time together as a family. Actually, we were together 24/7 for 3 entire weeks. I think there was one time that Jake and I like sat down on the stoop of one of the apartments we rented with the kids sleeping upstairs. But otherwise, we were together nonstop. But we were able to visit some really special people of ours in Ethiopia and then again in France. And it just was wonderful. As you know, the last 6 months have been a little crazy for our family. I've been working a lot. Jake, he always works a lot. I've been traveling for work. And of course, we started a podcast and I've been hanging out a ton with you in this space. So it was really good for us just to be able to get away from everything, take a break, recharge, and really come back refreshed.
I know. I really am so glad you got the chance to do that. Obviously, selfishly, I was just eating too much and not exercising. I think I wrote you one time that I binge watched like every terrible romantic comedy on Netflix. I was not a productive citizen while you were gone, but I'm so happy for you.
Thank you. I hope you get the chance to do something similar very soon.
So that's how you felt about it. Of course, like experiencing something like that as an adult is one thing, but I'm so curious about my nephews and niece. What are they saying about it? What do you think their biggest takeaways from a trip of this magnitude were?
Yeah, it's almost hard to talk about a trip of this magnitude. I think instead instead of talking in general terms about the vacation as a whole, we've just been really enjoying hearing their reflections kind of unfold after the fact. We are pretty laid back travelers, and we believe, I think, as you know, in simple pleasures like gelato several times a day, for instance. We spend a lot of time at the beach. And I think because we're so relaxed, the kids could hang with us and just have fun and adjust pretty well to living out of a suitcase for that long. Mm-hmm. We played a lot of Uno, which honestly, like, we can do that here in Iowa, but we went to France and did it a lot more there. But we just kind of concentrated on every experience that we were living together. And I feel like they did great. I think they were delightful. And I think it's, like I said, it's really fun to hear them kind of process it since we've been home, even just in little bits and pieces. Just the other day, Sintayu, our youngest, was talking to another family member, and like, we were in Ethiopia for 7 days, and I heard her exclaim to one of my aunts, she said, "Can you believe that in Ethiopia, my special people don't have a basement?" Those are the things that, like,
yeah.
So it's pretty cute.
That is amazing. Speaking of pretty cute and Sintayu, Jake, your husband, posted a hilarious video of her jumping into, I don't know what body of water it was, but she had her snorkeling gear on and he made like this little video. I'm going to post it. We'll post it in the comments section, you guys, from this podcast episode on Facebook. So make sure you go check it out there, because it was, my whole family was dying laughing. It was like 3 minutes, but it was so good. It was so good.
That's how you know that you're on vacation, when you have time to make like a really silly 3-minute, like barely well-produced video.
It's so true. So to pivot a little bit, as we said in the opener, you were traveling when the terrorist attack in Nice happened. Actually, the night of the attack, the Klipsch family had a text and a Facebook message thread going, trying to make sure you guys weren't actually in Nice at the time. Of course, it was about 2 a.m. where you guys were. So when we were doing all of this, we were wide awake and couldn't sleep, but we knew you guys were probably sound asleep. And knowing both of you, we're like, oh my God, they have their eye patches on, they have their earplugs in, they probably had a glass of wine. We're never getting these guys awake. But you know, we had your itinerary that we all looked at and knew you weren't supposed to be there for another day or so, but it just brought the whole thing far too close to home. And honestly, had us in a total panic until we heard from your cousin, Sarah, who lives just outside of Nice. I was terrified for her too. We hadn't heard from her either. I kept stalking her page, hoping she would check in and say that she was okay. But when she posted on, I think, our mother-in-law's Facebook page that you guys were not there yet, that she was okay, I just sat and bawled because it was so scary, you know, picturing anybody that I knew and loved there. Mm-hmm. And then it hits you, right, that like, oh my God, this is a reality for so many people. Mm-hmm. So what was it like waking up to the news out of Nice?
It was such a strange feeling. I have to tell you, it's probably not something that I'm going to forget for a long time. We definitely were both very sound sleepers. Jake wears earplugs. We both had our eye masks on, and you're right. We were enjoying, you know, the French wine. So we were sleeping pretty soundly, and we intentionally had not set our alarms that morning because we were using that day. We were in Aix-en-Provence, which is about 2 hours outside of Nice. We were using it as kind of a catch-up day before we moved on to visit my cousin right outside of Nice. So when we woke up that morning, we saw dozens of messages and texts and emails from families and friends wondering whether or not we were okay. And we really, it took us a second to kind of figure out what was going on. Once we did, of course, I panicked because I was thinking of my cousin. We were due to meet them the next day, but I knew that, you know, this fireworks event on Bastille Day would for sure be something that she and her husband would be enjoying and that many of their friends were. And honestly, we had in Aix-en-Provence, we had been there on Bastille Day the night before, and our server at one of the restaurants told us that their fireworks display and celebration had been canceled because of high winds. So once I heard from Sarah and realized that they were okay, the numbness just sort of set in. We didn't watch TV because what we were seeing on our phones and what many of our listeners and you probably saw too, it was really graphic. And we didn't want the kids to see that. And so even though we were a couple of hours away, we were pretty shaken up. We spent the morning just kind of sorting through the news on our phones and figuring out, you know, we were due to be in Nice the next day. We were taking the train there. And we're just kind of calculating, like, what's our plan going to be? What's the aftermath of this going to look like? So we were pretty subdued that day. And then in the afternoon, we went out into this kind of town square in Aix-en-Provence, and we were all just pretty quiet. We were trying to be really respectful of all the people who were surely so shaken and scared in their own country.
Well, and I think the reason that it terrified us a little bit was like, oh my gosh, if Jake and Leslie heard about this huge fireworks situation happening and whatever, that could be enough to draw them there early, you know? So it was more a matter of like, this sounds like exactly something Jake and Leslie and the kids would want to see. So there is small chance that that would have driven them there early, you know?
Yeah. And Sarah and her husband, Charlie, had the same comment, you know, that they had enjoyed that celebration the year before and that it was really beautiful and very nice. And so, thankfully for us, we didn't arrive there. We knew we'd need to build in a rest day. And I just, you know, I just shudder when I think about all the people who did land there that day.
Yeah. So you were able to kind of just sort through your emotions and the emotions of the French people, you know, being 2 hours away. But once you got to Nice or closer to where Sarah is, obviously it couldn't have been ignored. So how did you talk to the kids specifically about the attack?
Yeah, that was something that kind of all morning, Jake and I just kept looking at each other and kind of like, okay, how are we going to navigate this, you know? And we knew that we would be arriving in the train station in Nice the very next day. And we knew that the town would be feeling the effects even then. So we did talk to them about the attack. We told them what happened in pretty general terms and that we were praying for all of the people involved. We knew even where we were in Aix-en-Provence that there would likely be more security. And so we wanted to just warn them, like, you know, you're going to see some people, some army men and women carrying machine guns likely. And, you know, for all of the terrible, horrible gun violence in the U.S., it's not often that, you know, our kids, especially the ones growing up in small cities in America, really are exposed to groups of police walking around with machine guns that
– right.
Was a site that we knew we'd need to prepare the kids for a little bit. Our two youngest were really curious and they were sad, but they're pretty easily distracted, you know, with vacation fun and kind of moved on fairly quickly. My oldest was a bit more shaken because he had really began to just fall in love kind of with French culture. He was talking earlier that day about like wanting to study in France someday and was just loving the time in that country. So he kind of made a connection with these people. And so it was a little bit harder for him. Mm-hmm. We shared a little bit more with him also, since he is a little bit older, and we just kind of sat with him as he took it all in. We answered questions when they had them and tried to be as honest as we could, and then tried to look for the helpers and the hope out of the situation. Right. I have to say, though, it was hard. I learned a few days later that one of the victims that was from the United States was a dad and his 11-year-old son. They were from Austin, Texas. And they were there with their family on this 3-week vacation. And it paralleled our experience so much that I'm praying for this family, and I just can't imagine.
Yeah. All of it, it just hits so close to home. It's so easy to put you guys and us in those kind of positions, either the ones with the mourning or the ones who experienced the actual attack. But I actually heard about it from our sister-in-law, Kate, who's been on the podcast, asking if I had heard from you. I was in the car with Tristan, actually. So he was there when I put it all together. You know, I turned on NPR immediately and they were talking about it. And I was freaking out a little bit. And I remember him saying, they're probably okay, Mom, but it just makes me think about everyone else there who knew their families were going to that place at that time. Mm-hmm. And it's true. And it was a hard conversation because, like you said, with Oliver, you know, Tristan's almost 14. So he gets some of the larger issues of terrorism and violence. He's heard it at school. He's heard it when we're listening on the radio. If I'm being honest, I'm not even sure I helped him navigate all the emotions of it all that well. It still feels so new to me. Mm-hmm. So when it comes to international events like this, like, how do you think we as mama bears can kind of help our kids navigate it all?
It's such a huge question. And between the shootings that happened at the Istanbul airport that we were made aware of before we left, and then the attack in Nice, and then the coup that happened in Turkey as we were basically flying out of the country. We have unfortunately had to really think hard about this over the last few weeks. And, you know, especially the oldest two in our family are still asking them questions. And so I've kind of come up with probably 4 things that I'm thinking, you know, from my limited experience, is how we're going to handle it in our family. Of course, there's so many great ways, and lots of our listeners will probably have ideas as well, and I'd sure love to hear them. I think for us, though, first, we decided we wanted to let them see us afraid and sad, but we also wanted to temper that and our fear with a sense of security for the kids. Mm. So I might be wrong, but my gut tells me that these tragic events and all of the lives affected should really be memorialized. So whether it's a family prayer or the moment of silence, we stood together. We were in Monaco a few days after the attack, and the entire country of France and Monaco had 3 minutes of silence, basically memorializing all of the lives lost. So we were in this crowded store in Monaco 2 days or so after the attack. And so we just stood together and we acknowledged what happened and we said a little prayer. I think this could take the shape of just lighting a candle at home, but just showing our kids my own empathy for those suffering, but also reassuring them that their dad and I will do the best that we can not to put them in danger. So we were really thoughtful about our decision of whether or not to travel to Nice, you know, as planned, and then what to do once we got there. And I think they felt safe with our informed decision. We were horrified and so, so sad. And honestly, we were a little bit afraid, but our children saw us work through all of those things and then do our best to stay safe.
Oh, I love that. The idea of the kids being able to see that this is an informed decision, that you feel all the same things they're feeling and you still arrived at that. That's really good.
I think another thing is to look for the helpers and for those glimmers of hope and then just talk about those. So we were actually advised to steer clear of Nice for most of our time in southern France. And instead, we enjoyed exploring Villefranche and Monaco and Italy, but they're all right next door. And so we couldn't help but hear stories of people who had survived the attack and people coming together and people helping the victims and their families. I think, you know, my cousin and her husband were really sad and shaken. And so we could see them, but then we also knew what they were doing for the people who lived in France. And we could see the compassion and the words of condolence that they shared as well. And as we drove near the promenade, when we were going to the airport to fly out of the city, you know, we all kind of embraced the heaviness and we uttered some prayers, but we also observed the life that was happening in the city. It was exactly a week after the attacks, and we made sure, you know, we highlighted just the strength of the people and the fact that, you know, an act of terror wasn't the end of all life in Nice, that people are strong and life was going on. I think, too, the news that we share with our children and what we can do as mama bears is just share the basics. I don't want to complicate the narratives too much for fear that we create more stories or more news. And I know we're going to talk about this a little bit later, Tessie, but when we were talking about race relations in America and we're in Ethiopia, we're getting all these bits of news that we will again discuss later, but at one point Jake and I were talking about these things and we were having a conversation with the children present, and Sintayu, who has brown skin, said, "Will someone shoot me because I'm black?" And you know, she's a six-year-old, and this is a really intense question for a six-year-old to ask, and it broke my heart. So clearly a six-year-old understands things much differently than a 12-year-old,
right?
You know, I think, you know, we made a mistake there and we didn't censor ourselves maybe as carefully as we should have. We didn't attach ISIS to Nice because our middle child is already really frightened of the idea of ISIS. So again, the news we share is fairly basic. I don't want to feed their fear or send nuanced messages that can be interpreted as concrete. So we really choose our facts carefully. Obviously, we don't do it well all the time, but that's sort of a general principle that we'll try to live up to. And finally, Tessie, I'm getting a little long-winded here.
No, preach.
But finally, I think that we need to love those that we come into contact with always with our very best selves. So beyond, you know, trying to interpret these tragedies that happen, I just feel like I want to teach my kids that when human beings feel loved and feel worthy and they have hope in what's good and what's right, they reflect that in their actions. So, you know, the underdog at school, say hello and treat them with respect. Or that weird person you notice on the street, you don't have to become their best friend or really even go anywhere near them, but you can look them in the eye and acknowledge their humanity. I think, you know, the kid playing by themselves at recess, invite them to play. I think the kindness that we show others will help balance out this world.
I agree, Leslie. And I think it's so important, depending on the age of your kids. And even as adults, we have to remember we are not going to fix ISIS ourselves, but we can tear off little bits and pieces by doing exactly what you're talking about, by showing kindness to our people in our community, in our state, in our country, in really tangible ways. And that does take at least some sting out of the tail, right? And it's really, really important to empower our kids to remember that with their life, they can affect little bits of change here and there, and that they should.
Yes.
So Leslie, we talked about your trip and about the horrors of Nice. Let's bring things closer to home and talk about some things happening in America right now. While you were gone, you mentioned it earlier, we saw the deaths of Alton Sterling and Philando Castile, followed quickly by the five police officers out of Dallas. Obviously, you and I were messaging on and off about these events, but I have to be honest, I felt sick for a full week about it all. How much of these events kind of hit your radar across the pond?
Well, honestly, you were kind of my lifeline to these stories in some ways. I think at one point I did message you and I was like, what is going on? I was really confused by, you know, the Facebook feed and what I was seeing. So I asked you to send me articles and we had really spotty on and off internet access in Ethiopia. So I was much less connected than normal. I was getting bits and pieces though. And what was happening felt really scary. Both, I think, the fact that we were not fully knowing what was going on, but just how the sadness absolutely crossed the globe. We talked to several people living in Ethiopia about their impressions of the United States, and we weren't surprised to hear one response of fear, imagining themselves as a person of color in the U.S. One thing I kept seeing, though, was your Facebook post popping up all over Facebook. I read your response before I really knew what was happening, and I think you struck such a chord just by being so honest in your reaction to what was going on. It quickly went viral, and I was so grateful to your post to give me context to not only what was going on, but to give so many people a way into why what was going on in the middle of a hot July should matter.
I mean, I appreciate you saying that. It was so crazy. I was seeing so many people I respect and love say some really terrible things about the Black Lives Matter movement and about Alton Sterling and Philando Castile in particular. I mean, it was just really hard because there just seemed to be no level of understanding whatsoever, you know? So I did. I wrote a post that's now been shared like 1,000 some times. It was rewritten in a few local newspapers back in Iowa. I thought I would read it quickly just because I think it shows our listener where you and I are hoping this conversation goes, just to a place of understanding of kind of where you and I come from and also of just the different sides of the conversation. So here's what I wrote. I'm from a town just outside of Des Moines, Iowa. It's mostly white, mostly affluent. I grew up with two parents who loved me in a house that was safe. I was well fed. I experienced no trauma. And so I get it. Those of you who grew up like I did, who have remained silent on the Black Lives Matter movement, you know the world to be black and white. If you do the right thing, nothing bad happens to you. Your entire life has proved this to be true. Probably know a police officer or two, or if you're like me, you are close friends with a few of them. They're good people. People who go to church on Sundays, kiss babies, and take good care of their wives and children. So when you picture a police officer, you picture your friend smiling at you as he comes home from another shift while you and his wife pour your second glass of wine. The kids you tuck in at night are probably white. They look like you. They probably act a bit like you. And the only time you've pictured their lives being cut short by gun violence was right after Sandy Hook. It was then that you realized even if you raised them in white suburbia and did everything right, someone could still come unprovoked and kill your babies. So I understand why it's hard for you to hear people of color, because we haven't been forced to before. We who live in mostly white communities are never forced to believe anything other than our experience could be an equally true experience. But can I talk to you as a mama who is now trying to raise three black sons, a mama who faces her own prejudices, the ones not forged through explicit racism, but by being white and living in predominantly white communities her whole life? The stories you're hearing right now, they are real. The fear people of color experience of law enforcement, it's not only anecdotally real, it's statistically real and it's valid. So for today, could you just listen? Of course, I would love to see you join the people wanting a revolution from our justice system. But if you're not there yet, I get it. Could you just listen? If your first reaction is to defend, just don't. Listen. If your first reaction is to blame the victim, stop. Listen. Lay down your white privilege for a hot minute and listen. Understand that if you grew up white, are raising white babies, live in white communities, and the media you consume is from mostly white people, there might be something missing there. Namely, the voices of people of color crying out for justice. Your reality is not the reality. Your experience is not the experience. Please remember that as I post about Alton Sterling and Philando Castile. This is the only way I can live in this white body and take care of my Black sons without going bleeping crazy, because my reality is not their reality, and that terrifies me. So be gentle, be kind, and then start to unpack your backpack of privilege. Lives depend on it. So I admit that I didn't spend very long on the post. I just kind of wrote it. I was crying. I took a shot of whiskey to calm the nerves a bit. And I pushed post. I'm a people pleaser, as are you. So posts like this are just really hard every time. But the reality is, I genuinely do understand people who don't have to get the Black Lives Matter movement, right? I do, because if I'm being honest, I'm not sure that I would. I'm not sure that I would be saying anything differently than that they are if I hadn't adopted the boys, which is, it sucks to admit that, but I think it's true. I mean, you're from a small, mostly white town in Iowa too, Leslie. Do you feel like that's true of your experience as well?
Absolutely. And I felt it so strongly. I was reading the news while traveling freely, not only in the country, but the world with my family. Tessie, there is such an exercise of white privilege in that. Mm-hmm. I have two white sons and a Black daughter whom I cover with my privilege in so many ways. And you're right. I did grow up in a teeny tiny town with a white single mom. We didn't have a lot, but I had the freedom of not fearing our police, not being followed in the grocery store, not being given second looks, and not ever being a minority in the room. Mm-hmm. Part of the beauty of being in Ethiopia while all this played out was that a small part of that privilege was stripped away. Anywhere we went, Sintayu was in the majority and the rest of us were not. However, we still came as Westerners and we carry a perceived position, kind of. So yeah. It is incredibly complex, but your words ring so true for me, and I know for so many other people as well. So I applaud your bravery in pushing publish, and I just can feel the emotion and the thought and just that really, that rawness that went into that post.
Yeah, I mean, I think you'll probably agree with me that I've only been parenting Black children for almost 9 years. And to think about these moms who've been doing it for longer, or these moms who have generationally been used to this kind of thing, mm-hmm. It shocks me, you know? So it's weird. It was weird to get a lot of feedback like, oh, you're brave for saying that, because it's not brave. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, compared to what so many are doing. But it was scary, right? It was scary for me because I'm just not that strong. I was shaking for days. But so, you know, you and I have obviously talked too, but we've had discussions on race with our kids all along in age-appropriate ways. After Tamir Rice, who was this 12-year-old who had a toy gun in a park, someone had called the police, and then the police shot and killed him. I had to be really specific with my boys who like to go to friends' houses who shoot air rifles about what to do if something like that were to occur. Not because Tamir Rice was at all at fault. He was not at all at fault, but because I want to do everything I can to protect them and then just kind of pray it never happens, right? But after the death specifically of Alton and Philando, I also talked to Tristan and Dayla about white privilege, because for some reason, there was just a lot of denial about that as a thing in the mm-hmm. press and in social media as well, which honestly, I think is where most of the judgment and anger comes from.
Yeah, it is really interesting how this summer really kind of brought out that idea a little bit more. Mm-hmm. We posted our podcast with our sister-in-law, Kate, during that week because, you know, this is something that we had been talking about and that we think she did a really good job of explaining, just the different ways that white privilege does play out in our lives. And I mean, I know we both stand by all that she says, and mm-hmm. I was glad we were able to push those episodes out when we did. But I do believe this is where so much is miscommunicated out there, because there really is no reason to become defensive when someone is saying that white privilege is at play.
Right.
No one, I don't feel anyone is blaming white people for their privilege. No one is saying we should be ashamed of it. Honestly, I think people of color, they're just asking us to identify it and to acknowledge it and to understand that it really does play a major role in how our country works.
You're so, so right. I was trying to, Zach and I often talk about, well, how can we get family members or friends who don't believe in this, in white privilege specifically, how can we get them to understand? So I was thinking about lottery tickets, right? And how if you buy one ticket, you probably won't win. If you buy 100, you have a better chance of winning. If you buy 1 million, then you have an even better chance of winning. Okay. There are no guarantees, of course, but your odds increase, right? So in the same way, if you're born white, you have access to certain things like better education than people of color do. And this is proven. I mean, you can literally find non-political posts and research and great studies everywhere that proves this. So if you're born white and not desperately poor, you have even more access to quality education and better job opportunities. If you were born white, male, and heterosexual, then you have even more access to those, as well as things like affordable housing, less chances of going to prison, a justice system that gives you the benefit of innocent until proven guilty, and so on. So, you know, I think that like that's how I can kind of see it, right? It's just like buying into the lottery more. You're born with these are all things you're born with. So they're not things that you've stolen or hoodwinked someone into getting. They're just things that you've accrued throughout just being born that help you reach a different echelon of society and have access to other things that people of color do not have access to by nature of being Black or brown, things like that.
Exactly. And I love the way that you state that. And as Kate, I guess, said on her podcast episode, which of course we will link to in the show notes, you can be really, really hardworking. You can be really smart. You can be really driven, and you can still benefit from white privilege.
Mm-hmm.
So right when all of this dialogue on police brutality, Black Lives Matter, white privilege, when all of it was reaching these new heights, five police officers who were protecting protesters were killed. We woke up to this news on our last day in Ethiopia, and I crumbled. More violence from the States. Not only was it as tragic as the deaths of Alton and Philando, but it also complicated all of the stories.
Yeah.
It was kind of like you could see people choosing sides in real time and then becoming very judgmental and sometimes really terrible to someone who they thought was kind of on this other side.
I mean, you saw that from Ethiopia. Like, that's how obvious it was, right? Mm-hmm. And I would say the bulk of the social media posts that day seemed to say something like, if you think it's okay to kill police officers, then just unfriend me. I mean, Leslie, it was terrible, because even though I had many friends advocating for reform in our policing, not a single one has ever or will ever wish for a police life to be lost either. Everything is tragic. Yeah.
Oh, of course not. It felt so much like someone was orchestrating this whole thing so that we would all forget that human life is always so precious, and any human life lost is a tragedy, no matter who they are. It felt, and honestly, it continues to feel like this really desperate place to be.
It does. You're right. A desperate place to be. That's such a good description. One of our family friends is a lieutenant in a police department. You know him as well, obviously. He's an incredible man who has written to me before about learning about implicit bias and things of that nature. He's just an extraordinary guy. And I texted him the morning of Dallas, because just as the deaths of the Black men by police make me terrified for my sons, hearing about an officer lose his life or her life makes me terrified for my friends too. And I just kind of wrote, I love you. Thanks for serving. I hope you know I respect you and what you do. Last night when I heard about Dallas, I thought of you first and was filled with terror. Please don't take any of what I say personally. I'm just scared of all the things sometimes. And I just ended with, stay safe, brother. And he responded, I love you too. Thanks for reaching out. I just don't have the words anymore. I'm heartbroken. I need this world to be a better place. And I feel pretty helpless. I'll just keep on praying. And there it is, right, Leslie? I mean, it's common ground. Something that I think we forget too quickly in this world of like 24-hour news and social media is that we all feel pretty helpless. We need this world to be a better place. We need to keep praying if that's what you do, or lighting candles, you know, whatever kind of gives you this like centeredness too.
Absolutely. That just gives me, that gives me total goosebumps. What you just said, we can all agree that we are heartbroken and that we need this world to be a better place and that we feel helpless. Mm-hmm. I think there's always going to be outliers, just those kind of outright racists, the Westboro Baptist group. I mean, you know what I'm talking about.
Yes. Oh God. But yes.
The bulk of humanity, I think, just lies right in the middle. And it's really easy to forget that, but it's definitely where the sweet spot is. And that's where we will find healing, both in terms of healing our hearts and healing our country with the proper reform that's needed. I was reminded this, and you can tell me if I have these facts right, that in Wichita, members of the local chapter of the Black Lives Matter movement and members of the police department actually had a barbecue together and talked about how they can help one another. And the same thing I read later happened here in Iowa. So local police departments and local justice seekers are sitting down in the room and talking. And what would that look like, you know, on a national level or even just with our neighbors and friends, instead of screaming at one another, just listening? I think that would make a huge difference.
It would, you know, and I've seen some, and I'm sure you have too, seen some pushback from a lot of the kind of social activists saying, yeah, you guys can have a barbecue, but when are we going to talk about what really needs to be done? And I think there's truth in that. I completely understand that, you know, that people still need to fight for justice when it's due, which it is due. So we're not saying like we should all join hands and sing Kumbaya and then probably everything will be okay. Mm-hmm. This is not that. We're only saying that, I mean, I think you and I both believe that it's as if people say, this is where I stand, and then don't listen to anybody else. Right. And so we're just saying like, please listen, please understand that there is nuance happening in the world and that, you know, if for people who, you know, kind of like are firmly believing all lives matter, well then Black lives do too. So let's just all kind of come together with this. Right. Mm-hmm. And I think that people don't understand with the protests is just that that's essentially what they're doing is they're begging people to listen to them. You know, if you're one of those that's personally offended by the protest, maybe the best thing to do would be to go to one and hear what they're saying or tune into one of the YouTube channels that has one of the activists telling their story. Twitter is a great place to hear what they're actually wanting, what, you know, they're fighting for, a lot of what the protests are specifically about, because often the protests are about a specific issue in a specific city. Mm-hmm. So this might be the easiest way to hear them, right? And the same for people who are leery of the police. Maybe the best thing to do is to go down to the precinct and ask direct questions. What are your statistics for pulling over white people versus people of color? What is your racial bias training? Things like that. Right. It's been clear through all of this that there are some police departments like Dallas trying to change and grow and recognize the implicit bias we all have. We all have. So,
right. We're not just asking police departments to do this work. Yeah, we are.
Absolutely. But we're also, good
we
point.
We need to do it ourselves, each one of us.
Oh, Leslie. Fire. Great comment. I'm so surprised that it took us so long to get there. Yes. Yes. So, you know, if you are in a city where the police department is doing things where they have come out on top of this and saying, hey, we are bad at this, we're trying to get better and we want to hear from you, then celebrate that, you know? But Leslie, when the country is forcing people to choose sides and then there's this screaming and yelling, how do you intentionally cultivate love, compassion, understanding, both in your own life and then in your kids' lives?
Another great and another big question, and it's so hard.
I think, yeah, good luck.
My husband, Jake, he has said for years that he really believes that people do the best they can with what they've got. He's been saying this for a really long time. People do the best they can with what they've got. And honestly, like 5-6 years ago when he first was like, you know what? I think it boils down to this. I was really skeptical. I wasn't sure if I agreed with him. But the more I've thought about it and the more I've opened my eyes to the world, I believe it. And I admire his kind of hopeful stance. And I've tried to embrace it and let it be the basis for lots of conversations with others, with kids. People are doing the best that they can with what they've got. So when talking about the news and really the motivation behind a person's action, I think I subconsciously maybe encourage our kids to be little psychoanalysts, basically, you know, kind of guide them through this conversation of what motivated this person to act that way. Like, what do you think their life is like at home? Why might they have responded? How do you think that he or she has been treated by others that might prompt them to respond in this way? You know, what have you heard on the news? What are the stories that you're hearing, and have you questioned those at all? You know, I think these can apply to like these really big injustices that everyone starts talking about, but also just those injustices that are big in our kids' lives that just happen on the playground. What about you, Tessie? That's my stab at that answer.
Yeah, that's good. I mean, I think that's essential, and it clearly depends on the ages of your children. And, you know, we hit on this a little bit when we were talking about Niece too, but just like in Mandy's podcast, which was so great. We've gotten such great feedback on that. We'll link to it again in the show notes. We talked at that time about the importance of empowering your kids to feel like they can play a part. This is the same thing, right? I mean, my kids are older. They're almost 14 through 10. And I am planning on taking them to a protest here locally. I also think it's essential that even if you're feeling some kind of way, anger, judgment, etc., it is, like you mentioned before, important to temper it a bit with the kids. I'm not awesome. I'm not awesome at this all the time. And I can admit to that. I often get looks from Zach across the like the car, you know, like, would you just suppress the test for a second? But when I spew anger, my kids mimic it when talking to their friends, and it depresses me and it drives me nuts, you know, but it's just me. It's me. Mm-hmm. So it's not to say, I don't feel like your kids shouldn't know where you stand on an issue. It's more to say that like calling someone or an idea really stupid or a person will be the death of our society as we know it. You know, maybe it's overkill. Maybe it's overkill. And those kind of sweeping sentiments are better spent in conversation with your significant other, with your podcast co-host, someone other than your kids. You know, I mean, it's so true that kids don't know hate until we teach it to them. And I know the world is going to teach my kids how to hate people that are not that like them, but I can do everything in my power to combat that at home and to keep my house one in which they find only love and respectful dialogue and disagreements.
That's fantastic. I love that. I love how it starts at home and then you can spread that into the entire world. So fantastic. Mm-hmm. But it is really tempting to talk in those really sweeping ways.
Oh God.
Start to sweat.
My voice starts escalating. I don't know about yours, but I'm like, oh my God, here we go.
Get a little shrieky. It's true.
Exactly.
Oh, we bring the passion. But Mama Bears, we have come up with a few tangible ways that we can engage with the world and help our kids navigate that world. And we'll list them here. And again, as always, we would love to hear your voice as part of this dialogue as well. So the first thing that we have kind of come up with is just to watch movies about the given time period that is sort of in question. So it's a good way for our kids to see that sort of blanket statement of see how bad it was then. It's gotten better because these people have made it happen, not because people were shouting at each other or not doing anything about it. Acknowledge that there's still a ways to go in equality in many aspects, but let the kids feel empowered knowing that their voices matter too. And I think story and movies can really help move that conversation along.
Yeah. Speaking of stories, I think reading books about activism in the past is a really great way too, especially because they have that for every aged reader. You know, they have it for the preschool crowd. They have it all on up. You know, our history is full of phenomenal examples, the women's movement, the civil rights movement, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So you can go even further back and talk Revolutionary War time period with Leslie.
Alexander Hamilton. My name is Alexander Hamilton. You know. You know what? You
exactly. But there are such, yes, there are such good examples throughout the history of our country and the world. So find some of those, find them age appropriate. Such a good way to show kids that they can do something with their lives to improve the situation.
Yes. And most importantly, be the example. Even if it's just saying, I understand nothing of what this person is saying, but clearly they're very passionate. And so I will try to do some investigating and see if there's any merit to what he or she is saying. I think taking that posture and teaching them, you know, to stay true to their values while still respecting another person's right to his or her values is paramount.
I totally agree. So Mama Bears, we're going to link to some books that have helped us kind of navigate specifically what, you know, the country right now is feeling, what you're hearing from activists, what you're hearing from maybe people on your social media. We're going to link to some books that have helped us understand that our world, the world that we lived in, the world that we grew up in, that's mostly white, how it's different than what people of color have experienced. We'll link to some of those. And for those of you Mama Bears who've been on your own journey to discover this, could you please, please, please leave a comment on the Facebook, Instagram, or tweet us with your recommendations. We'd love to compile one whole list and then have it available on our website or something like that so that we can have access to that. I think that'll be a really great resource for our Mama Bears wanting to learn more.
Yes. And Tessie, let's move on to the dare.
All right, let's do it. So Mama Bears, today we dare you to not choose sides. Our world is constantly asking us to do so right now, isn't it? Pro-refugee resettlement or against? Pro-police or pro-Black lives? Democrat or Republican? But right now, we just want you to stop. And now listen closely. This doesn't mean you should stop fighting for justice or working on causes that are dear to you. It doesn't mean you change your values to reflect opposing viewpoints. This just means you recognize the humanity behind the label, that we speak to one another with respect, even when there's little understanding, that we stop discounting other people's story just because it's different than our own, that we remember the age-old wisdom. It's better to be kind than right. Today, we dare you to set a good example for your children, your nieces and nephews, or the babies next to you in the checkout line. The more they see compassion on a small scale, the more they will work for compassion on a large scale as they get older. Today, our hope is that this community that you all have built will be one that is known for its generosity of spirit, its commitment to compassion, and its fierce mama bear that protects all lives. We dare you to stop talking and start listening, because the listening is where we grow. Let us never be a people scared of growing, Mama Bears, because the love that you are capable of knows no bounds.
That is right. So follow us, Mama Bears. Find us on Facebook. Find us on Twitter. Find us on Instagram. And really, Tessie and I want to be listeners. I know we're speaking through, you know, your earbuds, But we want to listen, and we want to listen again and again. So join the conversation. Tell us what you thought of this episode. Tell us where you're struggling. Tell us how you're talking to your kids about this big, beautiful, but sometimes really scary and dysfunctional world. We'd love to hear from you. Find us on social media, or if you'd rather just send us an email, we're at mamabeardares@gmail.com.
Yeah. And Leslie, welcome back.
Thank you. It's so good to be home.
It is. All right, Mama Bears, thank you so much for tuning in once again. We will see you back here on Monday. Have a great week.
See you on Monday. Thanks, Mama Bears.
You can go even further back and talk Revolutionary War. Leslie
Hamilton. That was low.
Alexander, my voice is Hamilton.
Okay, do that again so that I can really melt it.
Okay. All right.